Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Uncanny X-Men Spotlight episode. I'm going to be talking about Uncanny X-Men issue number 2. This is the weekly series that is setting up the kind of X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe going forward for quite a while. Legacy numbering, it's issue 621. It's written by a few writers. We have Ed Brisson, Matthew Rosenberg, and Kelly Thompson. The pencils are by R.B. Silva. Inks are by Adriano Benedetto. And colors are by Rochelle Rosenberg. Joe Caramagna handles the letters. And there's quite a few cover artists. We have Linnell Francis Yu and Edward Delgado as the main cover. And then John Tyler Christopher doing an action figure variant. And then Javier Garon and David Carell doing another variant. So to bring everybody up to speed on what happened in the first issue, Kitty was flying some of the younger X-Men out to a big pharma company, and they were going to try to stop the MLF, the Mutant Liberation Front, from attacking the facility. Apparently, the facility had created a vaccine that was supposed to quote-unquote cure people that had the X-gene before it manifested itself. And there's obviously controversy about that. You're basically kind of aborting mutants before they even can become mutants, right? So, you know, a lot of political aspects about that. And much like the X-Men's always been an analog for civil rights and, you know, fighting for equal rights, minorities, and all that kind of stuff. Times have evolved, and it's almost like commenting on like genetic manipulation, right, of fetuses in the womb and being able to pick and choose what you want, and that whole idea of is that morally acceptable and all that stuff. So unfortunately, on the way there, Kitty's powers kind of went haywire, and she accidentally shorted out the control panel on the Blackbird, and it ended up crashing into the facility, and Kitty Pryde vanished. So meanwhile, there was a rally taking place where a senator who is a human proponent of the vaccine, Senator Ashton Allen, he was there to give the kind of pro side of the speech for why the vaccine should be used. And Kitty Pryde, as head of the Xavier Institute, was supposed to be the one to give the con version, like why it shouldn't be allowed. But as I said, she disappeared. She didn't get to show up. And Jean Grey was ready to step in, but before she could, Jamie Madrox took the podium and seemed to be kind of talking out of his ass, not making a whole lot of sense. And before we knew what was happening, there was an army of Jamie's attacking, and several of them had powers that we hadn't seen Jamie manifest before. And eventually the Jamie clones ended up what looked like kidnapping, or they're trying to kidnap Senator Ashton Allen. That's what it looked like. But before they could, he kind of disappeared into thin air right in front of them. So we saw at the very end of issue 1 that Kitty Pryde, Senator Allen, and the mutant Apocalypse were all being held captive at an undisclosed location. And clearly there's something more than meets the eye. And despite Jamie acting really crazy, he may have been trying to prevent Senator Allen from being kidnapped. So what this may have to do with any possible future or alternate timelines Jamie discovered in his own series, I'm not sure. I think I only read the first 3 issues of that series. I need to go back and finish it up, because Jamie seems to be a very central figure in this current X-Men storyline. Plus, with all the time travel and the multiple Jamies, it was, even though I read the first 3 issues, it was kind of confusing, you know, being that I haven't kept up on X-Men events in recent years. So I definitely need to give it some more attention and go back and check it out. So anyway, let's get to the synopsis for issue 2 here. It starts off with a scene far above Earth, the International Space Station, and sounds like one astronaut's trying to tell a joke to the other. And then all of a sudden, it's like, Houston, I don't know what I'm seeing right now. Are you seeing this? And Houston responds, negative, please describe. And it kind of looks like a flock of locusts in Kansas, just a ton of individual beings all surrounding a central spot. And the astronaut at the space station says, well, I don't know. It looks like something is growing in Kansas. And what we see in Kansas is, I mean, you want to talk about an army of Jamies. They're as far as the eye can see. And I'm not sure, wasn't there an upper limit to the number of kind of clones or duplicates that multiple man could have? It doesn't look like it from here. I mean, we're talking about a mass of multiple man, so many that it can be seen from space. That's just crazy when you think about it. Meanwhile, back at Beast's lab at the Xavier Institute, and I'm not sure why Beast is here. You know, we just recently covered the Astonishing X-Men number 17, the final issue of that series, and we saw Beast run off with Dazzler and Colossus because he was considered a fugitive for breaking out of a government facility. So not sure how he's back and no longer being pursued. I mean, maybe he just came back and government doesn't know he's there. So anyway, he is describing a situation to the other X-Men where, and this is kind of playing off what we saw in the first issue briefly, Beast and Storm in Africa. He was testing some water. It was like a new river or lake that just kind of sprung up overnight. But what was strange about it is it already had multiple species of plants and fish, things that should have taken years to develop, even bacteria and microbes in the water that shouldn't have been there based on the fact that the river or lake, whatever it was, had only been there for a matter of hours. And now there are some other interesting but strange natural phenomenon happening. Reports are coming in across the globe of various animals, some of them having been extinct for millennia, having all of a sudden appeared, and people are getting hurt. Apparently, the Avengers, the Champions, the Winter Guard, and other groups have mobilized worldwide, and they're kind of keeping track of it. But what B says is, in short, like too long didn't read version, is the world's trying to kill us all, and we're going to need to fight back. And there's currently nobody handling an emergency situation in the Rocky Mountain region. And basically, they have a dinosaur problem. And they need to send a team as soon as they can. So Betsy Braddock expresses some reservations. She's like, you know, I appreciate the severity of all this, but what about Kitty's disappearance? What about Jamie Madrox? Did we just like forget about all that stuff? And Warren, I forgot to mention that. Because Betsy and Warren were together in the crowd to see Jean speak, you know, see Kitty speak. And then when that wasn't going to happen, see Jean there to support her just in case anything went wrong. And as the Jamie started to attack, Angel kind of just went into, I don't know, a weird fugue state almost. Like he wasn't responding to Betsy's questions, and he just flew off on his own, just abandoned Betsy while she was being attacked by the Jamies. So while Betsy says, you know, I'd love to go help and even help my big brother, that being Captain Britain, who's apparently found a big giant fish, a megalodon perhaps, she's like, should we be ignoring these other issues? And so Jean reminds her that both Jean and Betsy have been scanning continuously for Kitty and Warren, and they're going to continue to do that, but they haven't been able to pick up anything so far. But Hank's point is that there's other pressing problems, and as much as they're all worried about their friends, they can't turn their back on people that need them. So one quick note from Beast is like, not to correct you, Gene, but based on what I've seen, and he starts talking, you know, all the scientific gibberish, and they're like, please cut to the chase, get to the point. You know, another TLDR, Beast says, I don't think these things are different. I think they're all connected. And Storm's like the weird stuff we saw in Africa when I couldn't control the weather. And B says, possibly, but what we're dealing with are things here appearing and people that should be here disappearing. And while I can't put it all together yet, it just seems like weird stuff usually goes together, especially when it comes to the X-Men. So Jean says, you know what? Let's do this. Let's, Hank, you take a team to Montana, deal with the dinosaurs, see what you can find out. And I'll use my powers to amplify Cerebro and keep looking for our missing friends. But B says, actually, sorry, but I have a pressing commitment. So Storm says, I'll take the team. And good luck out there, X-Men. So Jean keeps Bobby back to kind of support her. She goes and hooks up to Cerebro and starts scanning for Kitty and Angel. Meanwhile, Storm gets a team together, including Bishop, Nightcrawler, Polaris, Jubilee, Psylocke, X-23, Northstar, and Cannonball. And they get ready to head to Montana. And just as they're about to take off, Jean says, "Hold on, they can't all go. He's planning another attack." And Bobby's like, "Who?" Jamie Madrox. "Stop Storm from leaving. Tell Storm that she needs to go to Kansas and deal with Madrox right now, and I'll take half the team and go to Montana." So soon in Russell Spring, Kansas, we see the team of Storm, Psylocke, Jubilee, Polaris, Cannonball, and Nightcrawler. And meanwhile, in Montana, we've got Northstar, X-23, Jean Grey, Iceman, and Bishop. Meanwhile, all those young mutants, the ones that were in the plane crash, are still recovering from their fight with the MLF, and a couple of them aren't really happy because the X-Men have basically left without them. And some of them are more understanding than others. It's like, "Hey, we're still injured. We're told to, you know, stay here and recover," but not all of them are buying into that. Armor especially seems really upset. She's like, "They don't kind of respect us, you know, they don't the world's fallen apart and they just leave without us, right? That's what they think of us. We don't even register when there's emergency. We're just a bunch of useless kids." And she kind of has a point, right? I mean, if they're good enough to be X-Men and they're good enough to risk their lives, then you would think, "Hey, why not have them come and help us out? Or at least, you know, take one or two, you know, put one on each team." Again, there are a couple that are still injured, so you don't want to subject them to further injury. But of course, Rockslide's point is that, "Hey, we did just get our butts handed to us by Forearm." Forearm, the embarrassment. And so, you know, like I said, they're not all agreeing on what's going on as far as what the X-Men should have done. I mean, Pixie's kind of agreeing, saying, "Yeah, you know, Rockslide's right. We did just kind of get our butts handed to us, and, you know, we have injured, and, you know, if things are that bad, I don't really blame them for leaving us behind. We're a risk." And so it doesn't seem like Armor's necessarily buying it, but they're still there, still guarding the mansion in a way, I suppose. But what they do wonder is, where did Beast go, right? He said he had that pressing engagement. And in fact, where he went was the Fairview Medical Laboratories. That's that pharmaceutical company I told you about. And as people are there cleaning up the wreckage, Beast is able to go and get what I assume is a sample of the vaccine. Meanwhile, the team of Nightcrawler, Storm, Polaris, Jubilee, Psylocke, and Cannonball kind of teleports in with the help of Nightcrawler to the epicenter of the Jamies. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of them. Like, kudos to R.B. Silver for drawing this. I mean, there's not a lot of detail in here, but there are so many of them. And, you know, they're all talking at once, saying, "Leave us alone, go back home, situation under control, you can't be here." But the phrase they repeat the most often is, "They're all gone." And then one of them yells, "You're only going to get in the way." And he fires some kind of electrical energy beams from his eyes and almost hits Cannonball. And Cannonball's like, "Where did that come from? Since when can Madrox do that?" And Betsy's response is, "Well, there's something not right with him. I can't get a clear read on his mind." And Cannonball says, "Isn't not right kind of his normal? I mean, that's his brand, isn't it? He's just weird." And Betsy says, "Well, something more not right than usual." So Storm tries to reason with them, saying, "Hey, we're not here to fight you. You have to understand you're scaring people. First the senator, now this." Polaris is trying to reach him as well. You know, they're on the same team several times, X-Factor and such. He says, "Help us understand what's going on." And again, they're repeating the phrase, they're all gone, we're too late. Meanwhile, Betsy can't read any of their minds. She's like, I'm trying to, but it's a mess. They're confused, and I can't find Jamie inside them. And meanwhile, Polaris is trying to engage, saying, what do you mean, Jamie? Who's all gone? And we see one say Kitty, another says Senator Allen, another says, this is our mess. Stop talking to them. Get out of our heads. So they don't seem to be as in sync as the Jamies normally are. And the other thing you wonder, that line, this is our mess. Again, with what happened in the recent Multiple Man miniseries, did that kind of trigger something? Some alternate future, alternate dimension, some kind of something that Jamie's trying to prevent, trying to head off some kind of catastrophe, and he doesn't feel like he can trust anybody to help him with it. So Storm says, Jamie, you're leaving us no choice. And then the Jamies attack. And again, they're using a lot of powers that we haven't seen them use before. I mean, one has a long tongue and he wraps it around Jubilee's waist and lifts her off the ground. It's like kind of like Toad, right? And she's like, oh God, so disgusting. Get your tongue off me. 1,000 showers isn't going to get it off. And meanwhile, Storm saying X-Men find Jamie Prime and immobilize him, you know, that being the main one. But there's too many of them. They can't locate him. Meanwhile, they're kind of pulling their punches because they don't want to hurt Jamie. But at the same time, the Jamies aren't pulling their punches. And Psylocke just cannot make any sense of it. She can't locate Jamie Prime. So Cannonball is being overwhelmed. And some of the Jamies are saying, we couldn't save Kitty. We can clean this up. It's our mess. And you know, they just keep repeating a lot of the same things. And Polaris goes down. One of the Jamies using some kind of lightning powers. Cannonball goes down. And Jubilee says there's too many of them. The Jamies are saying, we didn't want to fight you. You made us do this. Another says, we're so sorry, as they're literally pulling Storm down from out of the sky. And meanwhile, outside Missoula, Montana, Jean Grey's team lands. Includes Bishop, Northstar, Iceman, X-23. And no sooner do they land than they're attacked by dinosaurs. So they use their various powers to subdue as many as they can. And as Laura is literally slicing the head off one dinosaur, she gets chomped from behind by a T-Rex. And Jean Grey calls out for Bishop to help her. And Bishop's like, just give her a minute. So Jean kind of stops in her tracks and just looks. And all of a sudden we see X-23 cut herself out of the T-Rex's stomach, coughing and sputtering on the blood of the dinosaur, saying, that's all you got? And Jean Grey can't help but smirk and says, all right, everybody, X-23 just cut her way out from inside a Tyrannosaurus. So you're going to have to up your game if you want to take the MVP title for today. And Iceman, ever the smart Alex, says, yeah, but shouldn't she lose points for being eaten in the first place? And Jean's response to that is, well, you can try telling her that. To which Bobby responds, yeah, I'll pass. Meanwhile, back at the Xavier Institute, where the young mutants are still holding up, we see there's a protest going on. Citizens outside in the park holding signs saying, die muties, God hates mutants, no muties, protect our children, take back Central Park. I'm sure a lot of them are advocates for the vaccine. And inside the home, we see, or the mansion, we see Armor saying, go home. Like, where would that be? We're in our home. And we risk our lives. Oya and Anole are still in the med bay. And we're trying to stop villains from stealing the government's vaccine. And this is the thanks we get, right? Like, protesters on our own lawn. And Armor says, well, or Rockslide rather says, you know, most of these people would pee their pants if they saw a real mutant up close, Armor. And through the crowd, we see a long, dark-haired man in a suit kind of pushing his way through. And the young mutants continue their discussion, talking about the annoying chant that they're chanting and how it's driving her crazy. And Armor's like, that's what bothers you, the chanting? She goes, well, I don't like anything about it. What are we going to do? And Glob says, yeah, it's just the way it's the way it's always been, probably the way it's always going to be. And the scene shifts back and forth here, alternating panels between the guy in the suit pushing his way through the crowd. Pardon me, ma'am. And the Young Mutants talking about how they feel, right? Like, why don't we go out there and show them what we are? Why don't we go out there and scare them? I bet they run before I get within 10 feet, is what Rockslide says. And Armor's like, yeah, we're not doing that, Santo. Like, talk about, you know, making a bad situation worse. Meanwhile, the guy in the suit has managed to push his way all the way to the front of the crowd. And some of the humans are warning him, sir, don't go too close. What's he doing? He's crazy. And others, he's probably one of them. And Armor finally notices him, saying, wait, someone's coming toward the house. And he knocks on the door. And as the Young Mutants open, his response is, my name is Legion. I'm Professor Xavier's son, and I'm here to save the day. And we get to be continued. So a really fun story and a really kind of surprising ending. Again, I'm so far behind in my X-Men, years and years behind in my X-Men reading. I mean, I remember reading the classic Legion story way back when. I think it was in the 140s of Uncanny X-Men. As far as I know, he was dead at one point, but you know, no one ever stays dead. Where he's been, is this a big surprise that he's alive? Is he supposed to be dead? Like, I really don't know what the status of Legion's supposed to be. So maybe one of you X-Men fans who's caught up can reach out to me on Twitter and let me know if just how big of a surprise it is. I mean, these students certainly look really surprised. So I don't know if they know who Legion is. I don't know if they knew that Professor Xavier even had a son. And how exactly is he going to save the day? And what exactly is the threat that he knows about that they need to be saved from? So there's a lot to unpack with Legion. Also, the mystery of just what the heck is wrong with Jamie Madrox and why is he acting the way he's acting? Like, that's a huge part of the story. And then something that we didn't even see in this particular issue is a glimpse of Kitty, Senator Allen, or Apocalypse. Like, who possibly could have kidnapped them, right? I mean, Kitty's no slouch. And when you want to talk about a mutant who's possibly one of the most powerful on the planet, that's Apocalypse. So anybody who's able to capture him has to be, a pretty heavy hitter. So it remains to be seen. And this is a 10 issue weekly series. So you would think that with all these different balls in the air and the importance of the story, that they would at least touch on each subplot, each plot thread, at least once, at least, for a few panels each issue. But we didn't get any Kitty or Apocalypse or Senator Allen sightings in this issue. So one thing about doing a weekly book, though, is because it comes out so quickly and it is so fast-paced that you can get away probably with skipping a plot thread in an issue if you have to for the sake of real estate. Because really, if they show back up, if those characters that we didn't see in this issue show back up in issue 3, then it hasn't really lost momentum, right? Because it's only been a couple weeks since we last saw them. So it is kind of one of the advantages of having a title that's coming out more often than just monthly. As far as the dialogue and the scripting, it's done pretty well. You know, there's a couple of fun moments like X-23 cutting herself out of the dinosaur. That's a great moment. And the moment with Jubilee and the tongue is done pretty well. Also, three writers on the book, so it's something that can come across as a little inconsistent. That would be scripting. You know, if they're all taking a pass at it, or they're all taking, this person's going to script these three pages, and this person's going to skip these three pages, and this person's going to script these three pages. Again, it can feel a little disjointed because they all have, a slightly different style. So not sure if they're all scripting together or if they're all taking a pass at it, making changes, whatever. But it does have a consistent tone and feel, which is great because, again, it's not always evident and obvious that it's one single voice when you have so many writers kind of stirring the pot, right? Kind of like that saying, too many cooks in the kitchen can spoil the broth or the soup or whatever it is. It's the same thing here, but I think these writers have been working together for quite a while, And they probably have a pretty good idea at this point of the direction and the tone they want the story to have. The other thing that I'll say about not having certain plot elements show up in this issue is when you read it in trade, which is probably the way a lot of people are going to read it, I don't know that you're necessarily going to miss it that much, because you might not even know, just depending on the way they do the layout of the trade, when one particular issue ends and the other begins. So it may be like in issue 3, the very first page, we see Kitty and Senator Allen and Apocalypse. So when you're reading the story, it wouldn't feel like, as a whole, that is, it wouldn't feel like you went a long time without seeing any of them. So again, I really like where it's going. It does feel like classic X-Men storytelling. And one thing that's interesting to consider is Chris Claremont used to do this in the Uncanny X-Men book, the classic Uncanny X-Men book, on a monthly basis, right? Like have all these balls in the air and all this, all these stories and all these characters getting a chance to have a spotlight and everything. And it was one book once a month. So this has that feel, but you would think that it should feel like it's moving a lot faster, at a faster pace than Claremont, because you're getting a book every week. But of course, the difference being that the way comics are made these days, there's less dialogue, there's less exposition, there's just less words, and the art picks up, takes up, I should say, more real estate now, a little more detailed, a lot more splash pages, bigger panels, the layouts are different. So I almost feel like, at least for the first couple of issues, this feels like it's about a half to three quarters of a Claremont issue based on how much of the story and how much has actually happened so far. But there's no way you could shrink this down into all fit these first two issues fit into one issue unless you reduced the number or increased the number of panels, I guess, and reduced the size of some of the panels. So it just goes to show different era. But what I do like is when Marvel does, and I don't like them to do them too often, but every once in a while, and I think 10 issues is a good number. 8 might be even better. We'll have to see. But it's paced so quickly that I think the weekly issues do make sense for a story like this, because again, you don't lose momentum on things that you have to skip for an issue, like the Kitty and Apocalypse thing, or Beast goes and gets the vaccine in this issue, and that's only one page, and who knows if we'll see any of it at all next issue. So the fast pacing does allow you to do that. And I imagine that, as I said, the writers have been working together for a long time, so they probably have the whole story and idea and everything that comes out of it, I'm sure, mapped out. I'm sure the ex-editor Jordan White has everybody on the same page, you know, on their X-Men yearly meetings, and they've plotted it out. You know, here's the rest of this year, here's next year, here's the year after, and maybe even the year after and the year after that, in real broad strokes. Like, where are we going to be in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? Who knows? But the fact that they know what's happening and they know how much real estate they have overall gives them the idea of, okay, this is how we can break the story. Here's the entire big story. Here's the main plot points. Here's maybe even some minor plot points. Let's put it all on a whiteboard. Let's decide where these story beats are going to happen. Let's decide what goes where. And then if you divide that timeline into 10 equal spaces, then okay, this is what needs to happen in this issue. This is what needs to happen in this issue, and so on and so on and so on. So I think with something that's planned out as long as this whole weekly Uncanny X-Men event is, that you can split it up, but it is a big story. And so even though you have 10 issues, it's going to be somewhat of a breakneck pace. And we've seen that in the first two issues. A lot has happened, but we definitely have more questions than answers at this point. You know, specifically, as I mentioned, about who took Kitty and Apocalypse and what the heck's going on with Jamie Madrox, and what's Beast doing with the vaccine? Why did he go and get it? And finally, what's happening that's causing these extinct creatures to reappear, and, you know, lakes and rivers and whatever to just form out of nothing, with accelerated growth? I mean, growth, clearly something big going on. How is it all connected? And how's it going to affect the not only the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe, but the Marvel Universe as a whole going forward. I mean, based on some of the teaser images we saw in New York Comic Con, this is a big event. This is a big deal. So all that remains to be seen. So I'll keep reading it. I'm really enjoying it so far. Again, I wish I had comprehensive knowledge of everything that's happened in the X-Men universe for the last 20 years, because I feel like the more familiar you are, the more you're going to get out of it. But even though I'm not familiar at all, I'm still enjoying it. So I think that it's a great jumping on point for any new readers who want to jump onto the X-Men. This is a good starting point. There's a lot of context and exposition that kind of helps you understand what's going on. Certainly what you need to know as far as what the story is. I don't think you need to have like a huge amount of knowledge of the X-Men and what's been happening. Again, the more you know, the more you're going to get out of it, but it's certainly an entertaining read. The art in this issue by R.B. Silva is done really well. The color work is also done extremely well. I mean, it's Rochelle Rosenberg, so you expect the best, and that's really what you get. Very bright, very traditionally super heroic. And also, I should mention the inks by Adriano Di Benedetto are done really well also, especially on the pages with the dinosaurs, because there's a lot of rendering to do there and texture. And also, R.B. Silva and Benedetto, man, those pages where there's thousands and thousands of Jamie Madrox, man, whew, kudos to you for really going above and beyond. So I think that's going to do it for this episode covering issue 2 of Uncanny X-Men. I'll be getting the coverage, the episode out for issue 3 probably in the next couple of days. So I want to thank everybody for joining. As always, please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure to check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.